The Guardian.
Last week, the world of science was stunned when Chinese scientist Dr. He Jiankui announced that he had edited the genome of baby twin girls before their birth. This was the first time that anyone's ever done this. And he did it because he thinks it will provide them with resistance to certain strains of HIV.
So HIV remains a top 10 cause of death in several countries, in particular developing countries.
Speaking at a conference in Hong Kong, He detailed how the embryos were edited using CRISPR before being placed in their mother's womb and brought to term. He refers to the girls as Nana and Lulu.
And also for this specific case, I feel proud, actually. I feel proudest.
But not everyone felt the same way.
The controversial project created an ethical storm and international outcry.
Many scientists have expressed their concern about His work, both technically and ethically. For instance, hundreds of Chinese scientists have signed a letter condemning the research. Others have called it monstrous.
Event organisers on Thursday condemned the work and said it was deeply disturbing and irresponsible, while a hospital in Shenzhen linked to his research suggested its ethical approval had been forged. The incident also sparked the president of the US National Academy.
Whilst the work is yet to be published and fully scrutinised, there seems little doubt that this is already a huge moment in the history of science. So we're asking a panel of experts, why has the scientific community been so appalled by His research? This is Science Weekly. I'm Hannah Devlin.
He was working in the States and he came back to China to do his research.
First, I wanted to get to grips with what He had done. Labs. Dr. Helen O'Neill is a molecular geneticist from University College London. And she gave us an overview.
Dr. He edited a number of human embryos, which he then transferred for pregnancies, which resulted in the birth of twin girls, which carried a specific mutation for CCR5, which is meant to convey a resistance to HIV. He has also edited a further embryo, which has been transferred and is currently in an ongoing pregnancy.
Right. And just to be clear, this is something that has never been done before, as far as we know.
As far as we know, no, it's not been done before.
And human embryos have been edited, but they have never been, the thing that has never been done is live babies being born, is that right?
That's correct.
Gene editing actually has been around for a long time.
Also in the studio with us was Dr. Ganesh Taylor. She's a postdoctoral research fellow who works at the Francis Crick Institute in London.
But when we talk about it in this context, we're talking about CRISPR-Cas9 genome editing. I often say that it's a bit like what the iPhone was to the mobile phone revolution. So it's existed before, but this is a new version of a technology that is just so much easier, so much more intuitive, essentially. Faster, actually, is what it is. And the reason why we care about it is because we can use it to do genome editing. So your genome basically is the DNA instruction manual to take you from being a single cell to being several trillion cells walking around. As you can imagine, that's a very detailed instruction manual. And it tells that single cell how to divide and what to become along the way, right? And so when you edit a single cell embryo, what happens is you change that instruction manual. So in the case of what He did, for example, he modified the part of those embryos' genomes that encode the gene for CCR5, and he changed them to have a particular deletion that he wanted to have in there.
CCR5 gene, one of most studied variations. And the CCR5 gene, one of most...
CCR5 is a protein that plays an important role in many immune functions, including infection by HIV. HIV can enter and infect a cell by binding to this CCR5 protein. So when you disable the gene that encodes for CCR5, you stop the protein being made, and therefore you block a route of infection for a common strain of HIV. This type of immunity is found naturally in some people. In fact, 10% of Europeans are thought to have this mutation. He was trying to engineer a similar mutation in these twin girls and make them resistant to HIV.
We first explored the impact of CCR5 gene knockout in mice.
In his presentation, Hert explained how he'd done some lab experiments in animals, including monkeys and mice. Then he said he began researching whether the same thing would work in human embryos. Dr. Gaetan Bergio is a geneticist and group leader from Australian National University.
I live in Australia.
He spoke to us about how the participants in his study were reportedly found.
So he found these people through AIDS association that is actively present in China, and he contacted them to recruit patients. He had two meetings with the patient, and they were explained for an hour and 10 all the procedure, the risk and the benefit, and then asked them to sign a consent. There were 8 couples at the beginning and one dropped out. We have, through the Chinese media, a little bit of details from the one that has dropped out, and looks like, so we are not sure yet, that the risk were minimized and the benefit were overstated.
Next, Hert said that he collected sperm from the HIV-positive fathers and eggs from the HIV-negative mothers.
The mother was HIV-negative, the father positive, with undetectable viral load.
Hert then used a technique called sperm washing to reduce the chances of transmission. He then injected the sperm into the egg before editing the genome of the embryos. To check that the editing had worked, Hurst said he took a cell from the embryos and sequenced the DNA. He chose 2 embryos, they were implanted, and 9 months later, Lulu and Nana were born. However, according to her, Lulu and Nana have different genetic profiles. Here's Ganesh again.
So one twin for sure carries the same mutation on both copies of the gene, and so should theoretically be fully resistant. The issue with Lulu is the fact that one copy of this gene has the mutation that he intended to introduce. The other copy does not have the same mutation. It has a different mutation, which using computer programs he predicts should also have a mutating effect, outcome of which is theoretically that Lulu should still confer resistance upon her. However, it's a prediction. And we don't know that.
Helen?
It's quite hard to get the exact same mutation in the exact same spot of each genome because no matter how well designed the experiments are, we're still quite subject to innate cellular reactions that occur. When you break DNA, it wants to fix. So there are certain processes which will make the DNA want to come together, and this can result in the loss or the addition of certain parts of a gene or a gene sequence. And in this case, he intended on doing the same mutation in both, but the same mutation didn't occur in both.
But Herb would have known this before implanting the embryos. And this is one of the reasons that this work is so controversial, because he exposed these girls to all of the risks of gene editing without knowing whether they would be resistant to HIV.
And do we know anything about why they went ahead with a twin pregnancy rather than just picking the one that was closest to what he was aiming for?
It is questionable why he did not just transfer the embryo in, which he knew carried both copies of the mutation. Previously, with assisted reproduction and IVF, if there was a doubt that one embryo may not implant, they would transfer 2 embryos. So it may be that he was hoping that one of them would implant, and in fact both of them did, which led to a twin pregnancy.
Okay, and so
I don't assume this was a control.
No.
Well, it's not a good control.
After the break, we'll be looking at some of the potential risks that her has exposed these twin girls to, and why the news has caused such an uproar among the scientific community.
There's many questions over the consent forms themselves and the ethical review process that they would have possibly gone through.
We'll be back in a minute.
Today in Focus is a new Guardian podcast that brings you closer to our journalism by getting behind the news every weekday. you'll join me, Anushka Astana, talking to people at the centre of the big stories impacting our world. We'll use personal perspectives and expert analysis to put you at the heart of what matters. Listen to Today in Focus and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you choose to listen.
Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Hannah Devlin. Before the break, we heard how Dr. He Jiankui says he edited the genomes of the twin girls, Lulu and Nana. The details of the study were leaked before He could publish his work in a journal. And so it was at the second International Summit on Human Gene Editing that he first presented his findings to an audience that was far from impressed.
First, I just don't see the unmet medical need for these girls, because the father is HIV positive, the mother is HIV negative, you already do sperm washing, and thus you already could generate uninfected embryos that could give rise to uninfected babies. So could you first?
I was keen to understand why the community was so appalled, and so I asked what our panel's reaction was when the news broke.
Well, for me, I flew to Hong Kong actually to give a talk on Thursday, and I landed on Monday to hear, you know, news reports, but mostly messages from colleagues and friends saying, "Have you heard the news?" I think my reaction initially was that I was not surprised. A lot of people were very shocked, and I think if it was going to happen anywhere, this is where it was going to happen. Yes, it was premature, but to say I was truly surprised probably is not the case.
Ganesh?
Yeah, I'd be really inclined to agree with that. When I saw the news, I thought, well, there we go. It's only been a matter of time and it's finally happened.
Gitan?
Yes, I agree. I have the same reaction too. I thought that's going to happen anyway, but I was quite surprised it has happened so quickly. So the first reaction I have is to call my people in China. So I have a lab in China to double check that the information is true. Yeah.
I think the one thing worth noting was the surprise about the gene, actually. I wasn't surprised that it had happened, that human embryos had been genetically modified or implanted. But I was like, CCR5? Why?
It wasn't that it was uncharacterized. CCR5 has been well characterized. It's more the fact that there are other treatments for HIV and there are other ways in which these children, even if they did become infected, could have been treated. I think anyone could have justified a single gene disorder that really has a truly devastating heritable effect on a child. Regardless of the readiness, I think it would have been a little bit more justifiable if it had been a mutation which conferred a major disadvantage or disability.
Yeah, so it wasn't corrective for sure. And also, I mean, the biggest complaint, I as far as I could see in at the conference, was the fact that he did the sperm washing, which was the necessary step to prevent his, the father was HIV positive, to be clear, and the mother was HIV negative. And in the process of generating these embryos, he had to clean the sperm effectively. And that is the standard pipeline for removing HIV risk for babies in HIV positive couples. So he had already bypassed that problem.
And to add a little bit on this, even carrying the mutation does not confer protection against HIV. So the rationale of generating this mutation TCR5 is very doubtful, I must say.
So given that you can ensure children with HIV-positive fathers won't get infected, a lot of scientists were deeply critical about the decision to expose these children to the risks of gene editing. I keep mentioning the risks, and there are many. One is the risk that both twins may have been exposed to off-target effects, a claim which He has denied. Off-target effects are where other unintended changes are introduced elsewhere in the genome. In some cases, such changes can increase the risk of cancer, or could even disable other crucial genes. Another risk factor for Nana, who reportedly has both copies of the CCR5 gene deleted, is that we don't fully know what the effects on her immune system may be. Remember I said that there were some people who naturally carry this mutation? Well, studies have shown that although these people have increased resistance to HIV, they have decreased resistance to other infections like West Nile virus and the flu. A former track record of experiments. Given all the risks involved and the unclear benefits, many scientists have begun to question the consent process detailed by her. Would these parents have consented if they were fully aware of the potential effects of this technology?
I think there are many problematic aspects to the consent process. First and foremost, that if you are the researcher conducting the study, then you should not be the person to personally consent patients, because it's said that you will have a bias or that you may be more convincing to the patient and you have a vested interest in the study.
And is that what happened here?
He consented them personally himself. He said he had an hour and a half initial consultation with the patients. Further to that, he had paid the patients and was going to continue to pay them for their time. So there was, again, an added bonus or incentive, which is unjustifiable also, to the consenting process. There's many questions over the consent forms themselves and the ethical review process that they would have possibly gone through, including allegations from the hospital that the signatures he had gotten on the ethical review process may have been forged.
And has anyone seen the consent forms that were signed? And do we know what incentivize these parents to sign up for what you guys are saying was potentially a very risky procedure?
So when he was interviewed on stage, he was asked if he was willing to post these on a public forum like BioArchive, which he did, and they have been translated. Many aspects, such as allowing for photography of the babies to be put on billboards, to be put on posters. So he really did plan on taking this to publicise his work. I think he genuinely felt what he was going to do was a good thing.
I mean, did anyone around the table watch the YouTube videos that he put online?
Yes.
I mean, they were like company style.
Well, he had a PR company follow him for 2 months. So that was what was quite shocking afterwards, is that he was so prepared for a public facing, positive in his eyes, campaign. I really don't think he anticipated that it would go so terribly for him. I think he genuinely did. There was quite a level of naivety about his actions. I think he genuinely thought that he would be a hero.
And you even during the talk, I think he said at some point that he was proud. He said he was proud of what he had done.
So I have conversation with those persons that were at the meeting, like you, Helen, and people that had the conversation with him, and it was clear that he was a naive approach and thought he would basically change the world, really make a difference.
Gaetan, I'm interested in, you said you'd spoken to colleagues working in China, because people had predicted that this may happen in China first. I'm interested in whether they were as surprised or had a similar reaction.
So interestingly, in China, I've heard a lot of surprise and anger. They feel betrayed. Why? Because they try to do things in the state of the art. China has a bad reputation in the sense that everyone sees China as some sort of far west country where everyone can do whatever they want. And this is not the case. So I have a laboratory in China and it goes through procedures as it is existing in Europe or the States or in Australia. And they were very surprised and really, really shocked.
Unfortunately, yeah, it leads into this kind of reputation of kind of rogue science and that it would just be an unregulated area. And it's not the case. There are many ethical review processes. It is regulated there. It's just that there was no formal way of monitoring him or coming down on what he had actually done, because he had done this kind of in his own time.
As our discussion drew to a close, I wondered what the repercussions of his announcement might be. Would his work set a precedent, and would other scientists be shortly following in his footsteps? Ganesh Taylor again.
I don't think so. I mean, time will tell. I think actually the biggest concern right now is the complete opposite. The worry right now is that it might lead to a crackdown on research in human embryos. That at least is the sort of academic worry, as it were. I mean, I sincerely hope not. And I suspect very strongly that's part of the reason why academic science and clinical medicine is sort of distancing itself from this act because it has not been deployed in keeping with our institutions, essentially, and our methodologies. And so consequently, the hope is that that will reassure the public that when the time does come, that they feel ready to start employing the technologies and the knowledge that we have, it will be done in a controlled and regulated and ethical manner.
Do you think that the way this first example of gene editing has happened, do you think it's going to shake the faith of the public in this kind of treatment in the future?
I sincerely hope, and I have great faith in the fact that the public is actually plenty educated enough to make a reasonable assessment of this. It would seem short-sighted to damn all of biological research and clinical medicine on account of one premature act. And so, yeah, I think, and I hope more so than anything else, that people will understand still that this is a good technology that can be used for good, and that actually the future is to be defined by both the public and scientists together. We provide the potentials and they decide in which way we want to apply it and how and under what ethical constraints and frameworks. It takes two to tango.
The scientists we interviewed this week all work on gene editing and share a conviction that in the future, this technology could change lives for the better and could help families overcome dreadful genetic diseases. But based on what we know about his work, they all felt that he had potentially exposed these two little girls to completely unjustifiable risks. Thank you to all our guests who made time for us this week. That was Ganesh Taylor, Helen O'Neill, and Gaetan Bergio. And also thank you to the Second International Summit on Human Genome Editing for allowing Science Weekly to feature audio from Dr. He Jiankui's talk. There are links to everything we've talked about on our podcast page. Just head over to theguardian.com/podcasts. Science Weekly was presented by me, Hannah Devlin, and produced by Greya Jackson. Until next time, goodbye.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.